Welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast.
What does the word disruptive mean to you?
It means going beyond the ordinary, going beyond the status quo.
Not thinking in the conventional way, not just sort of following the herd.
Disruptive means taking things up, you know?
Disruptive entrepreneur is somebody who sees the problem and embraces the problem with a new way.
Shake up and awakening.
Quality will take care of itself, and you'll go from being disruptive but also profitable.
When you use your own reservoir of talent, when you love what you do, then you disrupt.
Mix it up, change it up, and dominate.
And now, your host, 8 times best-selling author and double world record holder, Rob Moore.
Hi, it's Rob here. And now, this is a bit of a different flavor from the last few weeks. And I had my first therapy session since the virus properly dug its claws in. Now, I'd had a couple of sessions moved, so I actually hadn't had a therapy session for a few weeks. Now, before the virus kicked off and world was normal, my therapy live stream videos and podcast episodes were my highest downloaded podcasts and videos. They were outranking and out-downloading all the huge celebrities that I was interviewing. And it took me quite by surprise, actually. It took me aback. And the most messages I was ever getting were from the videos, and I suppose, to be honest, the outpouring I was doing after my therapy sessions. I've been getting keynote speeches from it. People have been telling me how, you know, me being open about the therapy that I've been having has really been helping them. And for me, it's become a part of my normal life now. Go down the shop, get some groceries or some toilet rolls at the moment. Go and have a therapy session. Go down the gym, go and have a therapy session. You know, I didn't get therapy because I felt I was broken or screwed up. I did it because I'd had mentors and been in masterminds and coaches, and I'd learned various strategies and courses, and always used other people more experienced than me to teach me and navigate me through the business world. But I realized that I hadn't really done anything in my personal life in that area. And certainly when the two collide, it was causing me some challenge. And so I went to see my therapist, and we had our session went everywhere. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of a heads up that there are some seemingly unrelated things that I'm going to talk to you about, but I think that you'll get real benefit from. So she asked me straight away, how are your stress levels 0 to 10? Obviously, 0 being I'm meditating and effortlessly manifesting my millions, and 10 being I'm all over the place and blown away and, you know, on the edge of destruction. And I said 3. She was like, all right. And she was quite surprised by that. And I said to her that I felt like I was in a positive stress. Every now and again, I get a little bit of a wobble. Who doesn't? Because let's be honest, it's been a challenging, scary time. But what I've tried my best to do is convert any energy that's panic or fear or uncertainty into productivity, production, creation, innovation, ideation, persistence, motivation, inspiration, hunger, drive, persistence, solving problems, figuring things out, making plan B, plan C, plan D, plan E, plan F. And so she said that she thought I was good. And she said, you know, what good has come of this? And I said to her, well, I've liquidated quite a few assets because I think it's important to be heavy in cash. So I had a huge watch collection. I've sold probably 6 of those so far. I've got another 2 on sale at the moment, which are probably 50 grand each, something like that. And I love my watch collection, and I have a collection of cars, and I have this little this music system, which is not a little music system. And, you know, I've always got quite a lot of pleasure from material items. I like to think that I'm not hugely attached to them, that, they, you know, they don't make me happy and I need them to be happy, but I've gained lots of pleasure from them. You know, I love a beautiful watch. I love listening to vinyl on an amazing system. But to be honest, there definitely are some underlying addictions there. It's funny because she asked me, she said, were you given many gifts when you were young? And I said, not really, no. My dad always made me work for money, which I really valued because he's made me entrepreneurial. She said, not at any time. And I said, well, birthday and Christmas, we used to get a lot of gifts. And she said, well, how did that make you feel? And I said, well, really, it was just great because we got to see mum and dad because they were always working in the pub. And she was like, ah. So she started reading me there and thinking, ah, well, maybe you attach happiness to material items because when you were young, you got gifts, birthday and Christmas, and you got your parents with them. And then you didn't really see so much of your parents when you were young. And then you always had to work for these. And I don't really know. Maybe I'll have to think about that a bit more. But one of the great things about the situation we're in right now, where the world is over, is watches don't matter and cars don't matter. And, you know, for the sake of making sure that everyone knows that Mark and I are doing everything that we can, the Lamborghini's staying in the garage until this virus is over. You know, cash is king right now. Liquidity is king. And so I'll happily sell everything if it means keep health and wealth and happiness, wealth as in well-being, and, you know, help as many people as possible. And I felt like, if I'm honest, I may have a small attachment. Love buying nice clothes, for example, make me feel good. Why can't I feel good in any clothes, not just good clothes? Now, I suppose listening to music is different because it makes you feel something. But a car, you know, you can get a nice car for 20 grand. It doesn't have to be 300 grand. And I felt like I let go of attachment to any material items now. And you know what? All I care about is having cash and keeping everyone in my company going and keeping everyone in my family going and keeping all my clients going and keeping everyone in my industry going and having lots of cash to make sure that we navigate what could be months, it could be even longer. And so that was definitely something interesting that we explored, and certainly the possible connection to my mum and dad through these material items. Now, some people buy them for the rush, don't they? It makes them feel temporarily better. The retail therapy, the pain alleviates, but then it comes back with the credit card bill. And I can certainly feel that when I go and buy really nice material items, even if I can afford them easily, that come down still comes. Because I had that when I was skint and putting money, putting stuff on credit cards and building debt. The next big benefit from having these troubled times are being so much more connected to people. Like my good clients, the clients who are become friends of mine and family. And my dad phoned me today, and my dad does not phone me, and he phoned me. All right, it's a 3-minute conversation because that's my dad, but it doesn't matter. He phoned me today. And my business partner, Mark, and my MD, Catherine, and our experienced managers, Emma and Tom and Damien, and some of our new guys who are really great, like Megan. We're really bonding, connected. Callum and Abby, who recently got promoted. The feeling of connection has been really quite moving, actually. And right now, I think you know who's got your back and you know who supports you. You know now. And you know who hasn't. The critics and the trolls and the haters are out in force. It's funny, I did a video about that yesterday, and it was my in less than 24 hours, it was pretty much 10,000 views and 65, 70 shares and 400 odd comments. Take anything about the virus out and it gets back to normal. but are you seeing the upsides in these difficult times? And are you thinking about maybe how I really feel like I've risen to this occasion. Now, I'm not counting any chickens, and you know what, things could get much harder. I've certainly not got all the answers. But I'm so much more productive, so much more. I'm working faster than ever. I'm more connected to people, even though I'm working harder, taking time to talk to people on the stairs, even though I've got less time. I've been WhatsApping so many people who I'm connected with, just checking that they're all right. And I feel this connection closer to humanity in these troubling times, which is really quite a gift. I am a bit of a softie for connection. And yeah, wouldn't you agree that 8 weeks ago, 12 weeks ago, there were so many things that were so insignificant, but we made them stressful and we made them important when they were not. You know, they say, don't sweat the small stuff. Well, let's be honest, many of us were sweating the small stuff. There's no time to sweat the small stuff now. Well, maybe some people have got time if they're in self-isolation. But really, now you can sweat the big stuff, the important stuff, the productive stuff, you know, the high income generating tasks and key result areas and key life areas. These are the things you can now sweat. And I think that that's a really great thing. Okay, so next then, we went into conflict. And there's also more conflict right now. People are looting supermarkets. There's a load of critics and trolls and haters and punks online. And so there's more conflict. And I believe with conflict, if you have too much conflict, then of course you create chaos. And if you have not enough conflict, then you delay but end up with chaos. So we had to let 13 people go from our team 2 days ago, which we've never had to do. Never. We've never had to let anyone go for, you know, reasons outside of ourselves. But of course, this virus poses a real threat. We run events. We run 850 event days a year. So we had to make a strong and decisive decision, which we didn't want to do. And we tried everything not to do, and we left it as long as we physically felt we could. And so, you know, that was not easy. And I don't think everyone could do that. And I think some people would avoid that conflict because there were upset people and there were angry people, of course. But we were able to do that because we thought, do you want the conflict now or do you want the conflict later? And in my life, certainly up until 26 years old, I'm 41 now, I was used to cower away from conflict. I'd avoid it. I'd suppress it. I'd hide. I'd feel weak and vulnerable and useless. And it would stew inside of me badly. And then once a year, maybe twice a year, I'd have this massive meltdown. And I'd end up, whoever was in front of me would end up just getting this huge meltdown and there would be this huge conflict. And both extremes were bad. Now, I'm generally more soft than hard. And I always looked up to my dad with his ability to have conflict. So my dad would always say to me, never serve anyone drunk in the pub. They'll just, you know, all the other customers, don't care if they drink 28 pints, they'll put all the other customers off. So never serve anyone drunk. And I'd be like, yeah, dad, I get you. And then dad would go upstairs and I'd work the bar and then a drunk person would come in and I'd serve them because I'm too weak to not serve a drunk person. I'd give them the benefit of the doubt. And the dad would come down, look at them in a split second, I'd see his face and be like, oh no. He's like, that guy's drunk. And he'd just take his pint off him and he'd go, get out. Get out. And the guy would square up to him. Dad would get in his face. He'd say, get the fuck out of my pub now. And my dad would just square up and such strong individual. And I always admired that. Whoa, dad, whoa. But I admired it because I couldn't do it. But I also now realize, well, I had my weakness and vulnerability in hiding away. That was also my dad's trigger. So my dad would get triggered and he would get angry. I would get triggered and I would get become weak and suppress myself. But they're both triggers. And in reality, conflict is best served without emotion, in that if you're delaying it, you probably need to face it now so that you don't get it worse later. And if you're the sort of person that's always in conflict, you need to back off and you need to let other people win. And you need to be the bigger person and keep your mouth closed and let things pass and not have a fight all the time. Now, Catherine has said here, is it really a weakness? Well, it was for me, Catherine, because I'd avoid important situations that needed to be dealt with. Because conflict doesn't have to be aggressive, like I said about my dad. It could be giving someone some feedback, or it could be, you know, giving someone an instruction, or could be, you know, giving mildly reprimanding someone or correcting someone. I didn't like any of that, you know, or letting someone go, or, you know, dumping someone, or performance managing someone. And these are all things that I would deem as conflict. Now, other people don't deem those as conflict. So I suppose that a good question here from Catherine is, or spurred on by Catherine, is, well, what defines conflict? But for me, business taught me to face conflict more head on. And I guess someone like my dad, he would have to learn to have conflict less head on. So I think it's being able to put the relevant conflict hat on, horses for courses, and know when to back away. Fine, I'll let you win. No worries. I'll let you win. I remember, but I'll let you win. And smile and keep your mouth closed and be grateful and elegant when actually you want to go fuck yourself. And, you know, backing out of an argument and letting things go and not chasing good money after bad and writing off bad debt and, you know, putting up with a certain amount of unfair criticism online, etc. And, you know, the avoiding this kind of conflict can be very smart. Mark and I basically learned that the more conflict we avoided in business, the more money it saved us, and the more conflict we had, the more it saved us. But you have to have a line where you won't allow anyone to bully you, and you won't allow anyone to push you over. And you need to make those firm decisions. And I felt like that decision to let 13 people go was one of those whereby there was a lot of potential conflict. And it would have been the easiest thing to delay it a week and a month and a week and a month. And, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know how much money you're going to burn, and you don't know where your sales are going to come from. And Mark and I have got a big project, like pretty much £20 million that we're developing right now. Well, if the property market goes off a cliff and the banks stop lending, we're going to have to mothball that. We could bankroll it for a while, but we're not bankrolling it forever. And, you know, that's a real present situation. So conflict is not avoiding those difficult conversations and those difficult things that you know need to be done, but you're putting off. Hi, it's Rob here, interrupting you with something you may not know about me. I was one of the few people on the planet hand-selected by Facebook to pilot their new supporter program. It's a very small premium model where you can get exclusive content and advance notice or discount of new products and services. So this is what I've done for you. Not only can you get best discounts for any training that we might run, not only do you get notified first of any launches we do, we also do supporter meetups, supporter dinners, supporter WhatsApp groups where you have a deeper community. I do supporter only Ask Me Anythings. I do supporter only content and podcasts. We have a community of 2,500 supporters, and I'd love to give you the chance to be one of those. I believe this is the best supporter program in the whole world. Find me a better one, but I don't think you will. So the link is bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R. That's bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R. I believe the gap between free content and paid content is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There's a lot of free content out there that's maybe not that good. And for just a few dollars a month, you can get the best content on business, on entrepreneurship, on starting up, on scaling up, on sales, on marketing, on the mindset of being an entrepreneur. So go to bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R right now. So anyway, my therapist and I ended up going into that conversation. It was really weird because something must have happened with all of this. But I was having a dream, and my dad's in his mid to late 70s. My sister's actually on the live here. So Nicola, you'll find this one a bit interesting. I don't know if you've had thoughts like this, but my dad was playing pool and I was watching, and he was with a couple of his friends, but they were all like 85, 90. But his friends, they were beating him, and they seemed to be not aging quite as badly as him. And my dad sort of turned into the against the wall, and he was really sad and upset, and he was sulking a bit. And he was like, well, you just keep beating me. I used to be able to compete with you, but you just keep beating me. I can't compete with you anymore. I can't see properly. I can't hear properly. I'm losing it. I'm old. And I got really upset, and so I started getting angry with these other men. That's funny. I get angry in my dreams, by the way, all the time. I have conflict in my dreams. And then I just burst out crying, and I wailed. I burst out crying, and then I woke up. I was like, shit. And it felt so real and so raw. And the first thing I thought was, I've got to go and see my dad. And yeah, maybe it's this virus and, you know, and his age and everything else. But, you know, my dad's had quite a hard life. And so it was really nice that he called me up today. 3 minutes on the phone with my dad is like 2.5 hours with a friend. So that was great. And I'm going to go over and see him. Yeah. Now, when we were talking about conflict, when I was talking about the conflict with my therapist, I said to her, well, you know, the young me would have avoided this situation and hidden and beaten himself up and felt bullied and alone. But the older me just thought, you know what, it's not nice, but I roll up my sleeves, I deal with it because that's what leaders do. And that makes me a man. And I'll get it done and it'll be painful, but it'll be less painful later. And my therapist loved that. She said, Rob, this is a beautiful moment, a beautiful moment. I'm like, what do you mean? And she said, well, you said the young you acknowledged the younger you. She's always trying to bring out the fucking younger you in me. But she thought that was quite self-aware of me. But I've always been able to do that because for me, I've had two lives, really. I've had before 26, where I was insular and I saw the world how I saw it, not knowing that it was malleable and it was perception and that people saw it differently. I was very black and white. Things were right, things were wrong. Things were good, things were bad. I was unlucky, life was hard, life was unfair. I can't do this. And I was quite a glass half empty kind of person. And then when I've been on this journey since the age of 26 on personal development and mindset and a journey of self-discovery and business and mentors and masterminds and goodness knows how many courses and, you know, running a really successful business. It's a pretty big business in the grand scheme of things from a kid who started it up and all the properties that we own and all the journey that we've gone on and the continued growth. And of course, now the therapist, for me, it's quite easy. There's the old me and the new me. There's the young me and the older me. You know, there's the weak me and the stronger me. There's the, the one that hides away and the one that tries to step up. The one that represses everything and the ones that tries to express everything. So I really have almost got a duality of personality. I feel like I have because I've gone on this journey of trying to better myself and become someone more self-actualized, someone I'm more proud of. I like when I look in the mirror. And of course, that has downsides. And, you know, that journey, sometimes if you just go, oh, well, this is me and this is who I am, and you don't feel like you've got anything to work on, that can be blissfully naive and you don't know what you don't know. Yeah, she thought that was good, that I was able to old me, new me. I think with conflict as well, when do you want the pain? Because if you want the pain later, then avoid it. If you want the pain now, but you don't want it later and it's better later, then deal with it head on. Of course, in a respectful, elegant way. And when you put things off, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Okay, now, right now, I am working from 5:30 a.m. till about 9:30 p.m. Give or take all the way through. Doubling, tripling down on my content, creating new products and services, looking how I can serve my clients and community, dealing with 5 times as many more WhatsApp messages, 5 times as many more emails. I'm really helping my team and being one in the team because, like I said, we lost a few people this week and I don't want that to happen again. And I'm okay with that. I'm actually really enjoying it in many ways. Of course, not enjoying letting people go, but I'm enjoying the challenge, the buzz, you know, the little bit of the... It's like a new obsession. My therapist, she said, be careful, Rob, because this is your new obsession, isn't it? You know, this working from 5:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. You actually secretly quite like this, don't you? Your new obsession. And she got me totally right then. And so I know that I have to be careful to still see my family, my children. Well, now that tomorrow schools are shut, so I'll be seeing plenty of them. But, you know, yes, hustle through these times for sure. Yes, do what you can. Fight to stay alive. Go out there and sell your products and services. You've got to do it. But just make sure that you do see your family and the ones that are important to you over the next few months. And you take a little bit of time for yourself. I haven't been to the gym for a week. I was in really good form with that. Could just see that starting to slide because I've got this new obsession. And us entrepreneurs, we can have these obsessions, can't we? And we certainly have to be careful with that. The next thing we discussed was, you know, do you inform your kids what's going on right now? If they're maybe, under the age of 12 or 10, and they don't really get what's going on, do you inform them that it's hard? Do you inform them that, you know, you have to make cuts? Do you inform them that, you know, some people are scared and worried and, you know, the world has never seen anything like this? Or do you protect them? And I felt like my mum and dad did their best to protect my sister and I, Nicola. And they never really told us when they were really struggling, and they kept it from us. And I, retrospectively, when I learned that, really admired that about them, because it showed their love. But at the same time, I would have had no problem them telling me and being involved in that and trying to help. I probably would have wanted to help and would have worked extra for them. And would, you know, human beings like to help. And I would have loved to help, or loved to have known. No resentment, and I thought it showed a great amount of love. But I feel like, I don't know what you feel actually, maybe you could put something in the comments and let me know what you think if you're watching the live video. Do you think, how much should we tell our children who are young about this and the severity of it and the seriousness and what it means and what it could mean? Do we tell them everything and just be open about everything, or do we protect them to a certain degree? Maybe it depends on their age and their kind of disposition and their personality. But that's something that I'm exploring right now. I'm very much, if in doubt, then let it out. If in doubt, just be honest. When everyone's got people come to me quite a lot with quandaries. Oh, Rob, I'm not sure what to do here. I'm not sure what to say here. And my default is, well, tell the truth. Just tell the truth. Just express the truth. Try and do it in a non-aggressive, in a non-threatening way, but just express the truth. And I think that that's a really good place to start. Yeah, so of course we're in unprecedented times, that is undeniable. But I just want to say that it's not war. And if you think about it, in the early 1900s, for really the best part of 20 years, give or take with all the destruction in between and afterwards, it was war. I mean, imagine now being at war. Your cars, your houses, they'd mean nothing. It's just survival. And, you know, we're not there yet. We're not there. And there's always someone who's got it worse. There's always a situation that could be worse. And I think it's always wise to remember that we've got a lot to be grateful for. And I think gratitude is the antidote to all pain and suffering. And I would certainly say that it's good to give yourself context and balance and comparison and contrast. Because otherwise it is really easy, isn't it, to get lost in all of this pain. The final thing we talked about was my dad and how he motivated me to work. He got me working from the age of 6, absolutely loved that, loved working for my dad, loved earning the money. I'd earn £1 a week, I'd go down the local shop and buy a picture of a Ferrari, then the next week I'd work, and then a picture of a Lamborghini, and the next week I'd work, a picture of a Corvette, and I'd put them all up on my wall. And I loved it. I worked from a very young age, like 6. and dad always motivated me to work. He did with my sister as well. She worked from a very young age. And if he ever wanted us to do something, he'd be like, right, get to work. Or if you, if you get all A's at your GCSEs, they'll give you £200, which when you're, 15 years old? So 26 years ago, that's a lot of money. So I got the job done because I wanted the £200. And it motivated me a lot. But I think my mum and dad also taught us to give where we could. You know, human beings have to look after themselves. I certainly don't begrudge anyone doing that. If anyone's trying to sell and market their way and hustle their way out of these challenging times, I say hat tip to you, good on you. We should be supporting small businesses much more. We should be supporting entrepreneurs and people who are trying to sell much more. And I'm gobsmacked how many people are criticizing people for doing that. Jeez, come on, wake up. But my mum and dad also thought it was important to instill, you know, giving. And certainly in my life, I've had my best and happiest experiences giving. So I remember I saved £200 over like working for 2 years. And I bought my mum and dad a £180 VHS recorder. So I had £20 left. And normally when you're 14, back then, you spend £5 on your parents' present. I bought them a £180 VHS recorder. And it felt amazing. Amazing. My sister, who's on the live, she did an awesome job of raising money for her kidney operation, which she really needs. But I was able to help and share that and raise some of the money through the community. And that felt amazing. Amazing. So I said it'd be a kind of a bit here and a bit there and a bit here and a bit there. But this was the first therapy session since the virus kicked off. Actually, it wasn't the deepest one I've done, which is probably quite good. She's probably breaking me in gently for the next one, where she'll go way back to my childhood. I'm certainly getting a lot out of having the therapy sessions. For me, it's personal development, really. It's just learning more about myself. And each time I come out, I'm like, oh, okay. I feel like I know myself more now. And I think if you know yourself more, then life's always going to be a bit better and a bit easier for you. But if you don't know your addictions and your triggers and you're sort of unconscious of your behaviours, and they just happen without you being able to almost, in another version of yourself, observe yourself. So I think self-observation, i.e., ooh, Rob, look what you did there. Ooh, Rob, ooh, that triggered you. Where did that come from? Ooh, that's interesting, Rob. Okay, the other version of myself can sound like a patronising bastard. But self-observation, being able to take yourself away from yourself and observe how things affect you, and then to be able to control your reaction and actually have a conscious control of your reaction rather than an unconscious lash out. For me, that's such a powerful journey to go on. And more we're getting triggered now because of social media and devices and addictions and way more criticism and way more conflict. And not necessarily global conflict, but, you know, online conflict. And I feel like everyone's this ball of just ready to be triggered and, you know, so offended by everything and so upset and hurt. I mean, you know, the previous generations would be like, what are you talking about? And by the way, I'm not belittling that in any way. I just think things have changed. So I think we have to be careful and manage what we let infiltrate us and affect us and bother us in this most challenging time. Like I said, the critics, the trolls, the haters, the punks, they're out in force. So I've been blocking and unfollowing and blocking and unfollowing because I've got to maintain my energy, my enthusiasm, my passion, my drive, my persistence, my hunger, my relentlessness, my joy, my gratitude, my belief in humanity, that we're not all just, you know, having a go at each other when we should be supporting each other and be more connected. But you've got to take control of that and manage that yourself and be aware of that. And sometimes you need to go way back to find out where that came from. But awareness of that, for me, I think self-awareness and then management of your own emotions, that leads to self-mastery. And self-mastery leads to business mastery. Financial mastery, because let's be honest, our addictions, they control how we spend, they control how we think, they control what we focus on, they control how we act with people. Our values, our voids control all those things. So a greater, deeper awareness of those, which I'm getting from therapy. It's really weird because I've done so much personal development. I knew there's always more to learn, don't get me wrong, but like, I thought, well, you know, what's a local therapist going to be able to sort of teach me on a deeper level than I haven't already been? But we definitely have gone a lot deeper. And of course, you know, they have a different model. You know, it's often a childhood model that, you know, your personality is formed then, and a lot of how your behaviours are driven are from childhood and various other models that they use. There you go. Anyway, cool. Hope you have a nice evening. I just thought I'd be more conversational. Thanks for tuning in. If you think that any of these points can help anyone, please share this video. Let's stick together. Let's stay close. Let's support each other in these challenging times. If you get a chance to help someone in business, help them. I mean, look, we need to help people across the globe in all capacities, don't we? But most people follow me who are entrepreneurs or starting or scaling their business. In that regard, make sure that if you get a chance to buy a product from a local person or a small business owner, do it. If you get a chance to share or support their work, do it. I'm not asking for any money, but I would like my work to be shared out there so we can help more and more people. Because business is going through a disruptive time and we've got to stick together. So thanks for tuning in. And remember, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything. James has just said here, I think you're trying to do too much for people and yourself, and there's not enough time in the day to do everything. So thank you, James. That's very kind of you to say. Sometimes I do a lot for people, and sometimes my self-care does drop. So I think that in some ways that's fair. I think right now I want to double down on what I'm trying to do for myself and others and my clients and my followers and my community. And I think it's important. And I'm okay with it for now, but I hear you. and I must get back to the gym and I must have a little bit more rest. I do get obsessive. So I hear you, and thank you for caring enough to say that. All right, thanks for tuning in, everyone. And remember, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything. Please share this if you think there's content in it that could help other people too.